Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I'm going to be speaking to Julian Resnick, and Julian is a journalist for the Cape Jewish Chronicles. I'm going to be talking about more testimonies. Are we going to see more testimonies from the hostages, and what impact are they likely to have on Israel and the world? I mean, the psyche of the Israeli population and the global Jewish population, knowing that this is what happens when you are a Hamas hostage. Very, very scary. So that's coming up. Also going to be speaking to Professor Bill Kohlbrenner. He's a professor of English at Bar-Ilan University. Also is going to be joined by Ronit Eitan. She's a PhD candidate in the English department at Bar-Ilan and a creative director of Writing on the Wall. Talking about Trump's Gaza proposal, what impact is it likely to have on Israelis and on Gazans? Let's not take Gazans out of this equation. It's about them. But can you imagine a Middle East that is peaceful? What would that look like? How would the world be? Gosh, it would change all of our realities, wouldn't it? And the reality of millions and millions of people. And you know what? Someone actually did something nasty to me and said, look, I want to make up, and, you know, what's it going to take? Well, the truth is, whatever it takes, it takes. You know, that's what you have to do. And in this case, maybe you have to do something completely different in order to bring in something prosperous for millions of people and peace. Don't know. Haven't tried it before. But it would be nice, wouldn't it? Can you imagine? Just after 8:30, I'm going to be speaking to Dr. Tal Mimron. We're going to be talking about the impact. What impact has the ICC and international law had on maintaining peace between Gazans and Israel? Well, I think we should talk about the effectiveness generally of the ICC. What does it mean? You know, who subscribes? What has it done? Has it done anything noteworthy? I would like to know, and I hope you would too. Then before 9 o'clock, Professor Peter Bauer is going to be joining me. He's an economist from the University of Johannesburg. We're going to be unpacking the aftermath of the State of the Nation address. And that's at 13 minutes past 8. Let's find out what's happening on the highways and byways very quickly. Let me just see if there's any updates. Nope. Okay, there's just two. There's an incident congestion on the N12 before Rondebult Road. That's the first thing. And the second is there's a stationary vehicle on the N12 westbound after Klip Rivier Drive. The shoulder is closed. So on the N12 before Rondebult Road, there's an incident congestion. Well, there were a lot of cars that were stationary there I think that's it. I'm going to stop bumbling. I'm going to speak to Julian Resnick. Julian, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm, you know, it's that question that you're not allowed to ask in Israel anymore. How are you?
Is it still?
I think it is still. So I know you have, and I appreciate, and I think it's wonderful that you have so many different voices about what's happening in Israel.
Yeah.
But I think that for me, what is happening more than anything else is that we are living with an unbelievable level of pain and trauma. You know, for all types of reasons, for reasons of survival, obviously, you work hard to live a normal life, to move beyond the pain and the trauma, but it is so much, still so much part of life that I think anybody who claims otherwise is either being desperately brave, and I get the reason why, but I think that the reality is that there's a huge amount of pain and trauma, and it's going to take a long, long time to move forward.
Yeah, I found it very confronting when I was there. You know, every traffic light has got a sticker on it with somebody's quote. It's either a soldier who has passed away, or it's a hostage, or it's something. It's everywhere you go. It is just in your face. And I can only imagine what it's like for Israeli citizens.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've lived in Israel now for 49 years. My first day in Israel, my first day was the day we rescued the hostages from Entebbe. That was the date of my Aliyah, the day I went to live in Israel.
Wow.
That was a day of unbelievable celebration and joy. I cannot even begin to describe it. And I've, you know, I've lived through ups and downs and all types of things, you know, serving in the army in the West Bank during the first Intifada, you know, all types of things. And I've never, though, lived through a period in which there has been so much pain. And I have to say, and I want to be honest, as I always try and be, it's the first time since I moved to Israel that the existential question of what type of future do we have is in the air all the time. It's a tough one living with existential questions.
Are you any nearer to an answer?
You know, I think that the, you know, I think that a few things have to happen. Number one, I think that we are going to be nowhere nearer an answer until all the hostages return. Now, I know that that is not just a simple sentence to use as an Israeli, because I know there are other Israelis who say, hang on, but for me, it's categorical. I believe that we will not be able to move on and move forward until all the hostages come home. And we have to pay a huge price for that to happen. But in my opinion, and once again, I always say there are Israelis who disagree with me, from in my opinion, without that happening, we will never be able to heal. That's, you know, my bottom line.
The other alternative was to say, you know what, we don't negotiate with terrorists and do whatever was necessary if hostages get saved on the way. And you know what, that in and of itself would have been something that Israelis, Jews around the world would never have been able to recover from psychologically. Because you're not talking about military, you're talking about civilians. And I don't think we ever would have been able to recover from that. I think it would have left a scar that just would have, it would have damaged us.
And you said something really important and significant now, and this is a big compliment to you. I think you're absolutely right that it's not only Israelis who would be scarred forever. I think you're absolutely right. It's world Jewry as well. It is clear to me, because I interact a lot with Jews around the world because of what I do, it is clear to me that the Jewish community around the world, those who are connected, of course there are some people who are not connected, but they're a tiny minority. They really are a tiny minority. Those of the Jews around the world who are connected are feeling the pain and are being scarred in a way that is not dissimilar from us. It might not be as in their, as in your face or as immediate, but I know it's there. You know, I spoke to Australia an hour ago, and you can feel the pain in Australia.
Yeah.
You know, so it's all of us. You're absolutely right to say world Jewry.
Yeah, if ever there was a doubt. Okay, so let's talk about the hostages. What sort of testimonies have we heard so far?
So I think the most significant testimonies, because I, you know, I'm not privy to anything more than you are privy to. I, you know, I hear and I read, I'm sure, similar things. The most powerful piece that I read was by one of the mothers of one of the young women who returned, one of the young women who was captured and taken hostage in Nachal Oz, in the army base, in which she talked about the public persona that the young women are in some way taking on, and she talked about the reality at home, the pain at home, the beginning of the rebuilding, of the unbelievable trauma that they went through. And I think that, you know, the thing that pains me so greatly about much of the world, as much of the world sees that awful staged moment with the handover of the hostages and what they've been forced to do and say, and then the reality of the unbelievable, what they went through, of the through the torture, the starvation, the things that are just inhuman. And as a friend of mine who's a professor at a university in New York and who's in a tiny minority of academics in America who are fighting hard to get the academic community to see the reality, as he wrote recently to his academic colleagues, how can you in any way support an organization that attacks women, that beats women, that doesn't, you know, I'm not even going to use the language or talk about what they did to women, you know, while they were in captivity. How can you in any way support them? And I have to say that healing is going to take a long time. I'll say one more thing about a hostage that came back. There's one hostage who returned who I know personally, who I used to, you know, I live on a kibbutz. I worked in the dairy for many years. Many, many years ago, Keith Siegel and I used to do morning milkings on the kibbutz. You could never have met a more gentle, quiet, lovely, loving human being than Keith. And to see what he went through.
Jules, we all feel it. We all feel it. You more profoundly because you know him personally. But you know what? We don't have to know people personally to feel it. And absolutely. What you're feeling, we also feel.
You know, the things that he was forced to write, the things that he was forced to say, but that people are going to accept that this is, he was well treated when he had half a pita every 2 days, when a young woman soldier was given half a cup of water to wash her body with every 2 days. I mean, the level of the humiliation and the mocking of and the torture, and it's beyond comprehension. So there is a clear understanding that even though we're putting on a brave face and we're trying to show the world that we can cope with anything, these people, particularly the young women, face many, many years of a very difficult healing process.
And
they, of course, more intensely than the rest of us. God forbid I should even think of comparing my pain and their pain. But there is going to have to be a huge amount of healing, And we need to, my big thing, if I can just be political for a second.
For a second, because we need to wrap up.
Okay. My big thing is that each and every one of us is to make a commitment to reach out to a Jew who thinks differently from the way we think and find a way to be Jewish together. That's my big learning from what's going on. I really believe it's, if I would say this is my message for Shabbat, accept the fact that you and I might disagree about certain things, but we're in this together. That's the crucial thing for me.
Are we though, Julian? I mean, are we? Yeah. When I'm thinking about Jews who think differently, I'm thinking about Jews who don't want a state of Israel to exist. I don't know how to find common ground.
So, look, I'm not naive. I have my limits as well. I was in a conversation last week at the Literature Festival in Jaipur in India with a man who, when I spoke out very strongly on behalf of Israel, a man who was very aggressive towards me, and I said to him, look, I am prepared to have a conversation with you as long as you understand there cannot be aggression in the conversation. We can disagree. We can disagree fundamentally. I'm prepared to reach out to you as another human being, but if you're going to be as aggressive as you are being towards me, then I can't talk. And he wouldn't take the aggression out, so I walked away. I am prepared to engage with people who have very, very, very different views from me, really very different views, as long as we can engage in a way that is civil and civilized.
Julian, that is where, unfortunately, we have to leave it. I wish we had started having this conversation earlier, because then we could have
next
time. Anyway, have a wonderful Shabbos, and thank you so much. So it's Julian Resnick. He's a journalist for the Cape Jewish Chronicles, talking about testimonies, hostages.